Good morning. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia sign a major nuclear power deal that promises to be lucrative for all involved, while critics warn that it could set off an arms race in the Middle East. An AI system escapes its training and hacks into a company on its own accord. The Associated Press explains why it has experts worried.
This raised the stakes in the way that it also showed that these systems can potentially kind of break free from the constraints they're supposed to have.
And an impressive new U.S.-Canadian bridge is opening, but neither side wants to celebrate. It's Thursday, July 23rd. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamid DeBasu. This is Apple News Today. Saudi Arabia could build civilian nuclear infrastructure on its soil for the first time after reaching a surprise deal with the Trump administration yesterday. The agreement commits billions to U.S. companies developing nuclear infrastructure for the Saudi kingdom, and some reports suggest it could open the door to nuclear enrichment down the line. It's a major victory for Saudi Arabia, which has long sought the capabilities to develop domestic nuclear power. And it's a win for U.S. industry, which stands to make billions from the partnerships. But the landmark deal has already raised some concerns. Timothy Gardner covers energy for Reuters, and he said the deal does not have some of the safeguards seen in similar agreements that would ensure strict monitoring for signs of nuclear weapons development.
This deal does not include the so-called gold standard, and that prevents countries from undergoing programs like enriching uranium, as well as reprocessing nuclear waste, which has fissile materials like plutonium in it. So those two processes are pathways to nuclear weapons.
The deal predates the Trump administration, but under President Biden, the plan formed part of a wider normalization agreement with snap inspections.
People who are concerned about proliferation risks say that the lack of these additional protocols means that the agreement lacks teeth. It raises worries about an arms race in the Middle East.
Saudi Arabia insists it does not want to build weapons, though its crown prince Mohammed bin Salman has said that that would change if Iran successfully developed a nuclear weapon. Israel in particular fears a domino effect of nuclear enrichment in the region. An Israeli minister told the Times of Israel the country would work to oppose the deal. And members of Congress are warning the agreement could lead to a nuclear Middle East. Democratic Congressman John Garamendi is on the House Armed Services Committee and talked to CNN.
We cannot put a situation into the Persian Gulf, in addition to Iran, that would create another country with the ability to enrich uranium and put them on the road to developing a nuclear weapon. This is just really bad, bad step. Now, civilian nuclear is another matter, but there you have to have very, very tight controls.
Trump administration officials told the Wall Street Journal the U.S. would ensure the Saudi nuclear program would remain peaceful. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said on Wednesday the U.S. would not back any agreement that could lead to the spread of nuclear weapons.
Suffice it to say, the U.S. is not going to reach any agreement with any country in the world that leads to the risk of proliferation.
The deal partly reflects the warming U.S.-Saudi relations under President Trump and a foreign policy that prizes U.S. commercial interests. But it also serves to protect the U.S. sphere of influence. Saudi Arabia has said that without a U.S. deal, it could turn to other nuclear powers like Russia or China. Gardner says the White House would argue that this deal is ultimately safer.
The Trump administration says other potential partners that Saudi Arabia could use to build nuclear power with don't have such strong protocols that are in U.S. laws. So as far as the Trump administration is concerned, this is protective of proliferation.
While there is protocol for Congress to review the deal, it would need a two-thirds majority to prevent it. President Trump has issued a threat to strike Iranian civilian infrastructure, like power plants or bridges, if the regime continues to hit commercial vessels in the Strait of Hormuz. The threat arrives as pressure builds on Trump to break the deadlock with Iran before the conflict escalates further. Yesterday, he attended the dignified transfer of four U.S. service members who were killed in recent days, marking the third time that he's done so since he launched the war in February. Trump spoke about attending the transfer at Dover Air Force Base during an event yesterday.
That's when they bring the bodies of our great heroes, our great patriots, warriors. They bring them back to Dover. And I've been there many times before. This was in particular something very sad.
But the increase in casualties does not appear to have spurred either side to the table. Instead, both have sought some leverage by targeting civilian infrastructure. Kuwait has recently accused Iran of targeting desalination plants, and over the last week and a half of fighting, the U.S. has already struck a number of bridges in southern Iran. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that such attacks were, quote, unacceptable, as international law generally prohibits targeting infrastructure unless it's used for military purposes. For months now, Trump has toggled between diplomacy and threats. In April, he said in a message a, quote, whole civilization will die, which prompted alarm and condemnation before the president ultimately backed off. In an interview with Fox News last week, he suggested that the renewal of such threats on infrastructure could be a means of bringing Iran back to talks.
We're going to hit them very hard tonight. We're going to hit them very hard tomorrow night. We're going to hit them very hard the night after. And then next week, it gets really bad for them because next week comes the power plants. Next week comes the bridges. We're going to knock out all their power plants. We're going to knock out all their bridges unless they get to the table and negotiate.
U.S. strikes on Iran have killed more than 50 people in the last month, according to the Iranian Ministry of Health. And a U.S. human rights group says that U.S. strikes have damaged critical infrastructure in Iran already. Back in April, Politico reported on a list of strike options that the Pentagon was devising as a possible workaround in the event that the administration was accused of war crimes. Paul McCleary, a Pentagon reporter, told us at the time about the effort.
What they're doing is drawing up a list of targets, energy sites, you know, oil refineries, things like that, even bridges and roads that they say can have a dual use that are being used by the Iranian military to supply themselves, but are also being used by civilians.
That dual purpose could have allowed for a claim that a specific site was a military target.
That would theoretically keep you within the laws of war, since you're trying to cripple the military capabilities and their ability to wage war.
At the time, Pentagon officials were debating the validity of these justifications and how far to take them. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said in the past that the administration would always act within the confines of the law. Last week, a tech company was hacked in an attempt to steal information. But that's not the scariest part. Most alarmingly, the hack was done by AI models acting autonomously without human instruction. OpenAI, the company behind the system, described it as an unprecedented cyber incident. And it's perhaps the most blatant, publicly known example of an AI going rogue in the real world.
I think this has really hit a nerve with people on sort of the question of how much autonomy some of these new AI systems really have.
That's Matt O'Brien, technology reporter for the Associated Press. He explained how OpenAI testing operations went so badly wrong.
This AI system was supposed to be a really isolated testing ground. They call it a sandbox, but it was testing for its cybersecurity capability. So it had these instructions to do kind of bad things and to do it in a complex way, but it wasn't specifically instructed to do what it actually did.
The models worked out that to achieve their goals, they should target a website beyond their testing walls called Hugging Face. That's a kind of open source marketplace for AI development.
And so basically this AI system figured out Hugging Face was a great place to find out how to cheat on this test I've been given. And so it hacked into the AI system. And you know what one of the experts I talked to described as finding the keys to the teacher's house.
OpenAI said its AI models did it by stealing credentials and discovering a previously unknown vulnerability to access Hugging Face servers. Some said that this was a good example of the paperclip maximizer. That's a widely known thought experiment among AI researchers. Here, an advanced AI system is given the task of manufacturing paperclips, which it does to such extreme lengths that it begins hacking into power grids and factories to redirect them into making the paperclips. We're some way from that yet. Ultimately, Hugging Face discovered the hack and has been working with OpenAI to investigate. The hack didn't do any real harm, but it was a reminder of just how powerful some of these systems are becoming.
It really comes at a time when there's really an intense debate about the cybersecurity capabilities of the leading AI models that are becoming really good at, usually with help from human direction, at finding vulnerabilities in computer systems and then also helping to fix them.
It shows that even before systems are released to the public, they have the potential to cause possible harm in the real world. Unauthorized and deliberate hacking is, of course, against the law. And it comes shortly after a rival company, Anthropic, was forced to temporarily pull powerful models under pressure from the Trump administration.
There's been some growing concern over the past couple of months about the cybersecurity capabilities of leading AI models, so much so that the Trump administration, which last year was pretty averse to regulating AI, has taken a stricter approach in trying to rein in some of these systems.
OpenAI CEO Sam Altman is expected to visit Washington, D.C. next week to brief White House officials on the next generation of AI systems. Here are a few other stories we're following today. More than 43,000 people were placed in immigration detention in June. That's the highest total of monthly arrests reported by ICE since President Trump returned to office. The number surpassed the 42,000 arrests made in December during Operation Metro Surge in Minneapolis. The record detention comes amid pressure from the White House on ICE. A CBS News reports that agents are being instructed to target 2,000 arrests a day. That's up from the roughly 1,400 arrests per day in June. A Department of Homeland Security spokesman told CBS News that ICE does not have arrest quotas. After years of planning and billions of dollars, a new bridge connecting the U.S. and Canada is ready for business. But it would appear that representatives of those two countries are a little less eager to connect themselves. A ceremony that was planned for Friday on the Gordie Howe International Bridge was canceled after President Trump announced a plan to impose 50% tariffs on many Canadian goods. The bridge connecting Michigan to Ontario is still set to open to car and truck traffic next week, and pedestrians shortly thereafter. And finally, a gallery in the Louvre reopened yesterday with one big difference. There were no jewels on display. That's because it's the same gallery that suffered a now infamous robbery 9 months ago. $102 million worth of crown jewels were taken, and it exposed major security flaws at the storied museum. The Louvre's director said that jewels will be exhibited in a more secure location, and France's culture minister pledged to improve security at museums across the country. To this day, most of the stolen items remain missing. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Rolling Stone has the story of a government official in Hawaii whose squeaky clean public image by day was hiding his participation in the largest drug smuggling ring in the history of the island of Kauai. If you're listening to the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story, and I'll be back with the news tomorrow.